realized that I'd been asked a question. Skipton, I said.
Ooh, you left crossing Blackwell Cross Cambers up there, he said, or something similarly meaningless. No, me, I live in Upton-on-Severn.
The Severn Boar, I said reflexively, but he missed my meaning.
That's right, runs right past the house. Now, down there, we have Z-46 and Nucy spin cycles with Abbott and Costello horizontal thrusters. You can always tell a Z-46 because they go patoosh-patoosh over seamed points, rather than ka-toink-ka-toink. It's a dead giveaway every time. I bet you didn't know that.
I ended up feeling sorry for him. His wife had died 2 years before, suicide, I would guess, and he had devoted himself since then to traveling the rail lines of Britain, counting rivets, noting breastplate numbers, and doing whatever else it is these poor people do to pass the time until God takes them away to a merciful death.
And tomorrow, it's the final part as we go from Glasgow right the way down to the Yorkshire Dales. Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson, abridged and read by Kerry Shale, and produced by Paul Kent.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
3 o'clock, good afternoon. Wes Butters with you on National Poetry Day. So for the first time on 4 Extra, a haunting tale of love, madness and murder in a classic poem of the mid-19th century. Then more celebration of National Poetry Day in the 4 o'clock show. And forget emails and texts. Today, Mel's looking at the history of one of the slowest forms of communication, the message in a bottle. So all that and more coming up at 4. Now, a disturbed young man roams the windswept hills, haunted by his father's suicide. He blames his father's old friend, the Lord of the Hall, for his ruin. The young man was betrothed to the Lord's daughter when they were children, but she and her family left the area after the death. Now, there are workmen up at the Hall, and she has come home. Joseph Milson reads Alfred Lord Tennyson's 1855 dark and lyrical poem. Maud.
I hate the dreadful hollow behind the little wood. Its lips in the field above are dabbled with blood-red heath. Red-ribbed ledges drip with a silent horror of blood. And echo, there, whatever is asked her, answers... death.
Death, death.
For there in the ghastly pit long since a body was found, his who had given me life. Oh, Father. Oh, God, was it well? Mangled and flattened and crushed and dinted into the ground. There yet lies the rock that fell with him when he fell. Did he fling himself down? Who knows? For a vast speculation had failed. And ever he muttered and maddened and ever wand with despair. And out he walked when the wind like a broken worldling wailed and the flying gold of the ruined woodlands drove through the air. I remember the time, for the roots of my hair were stirred by a shuffled step, by a dead weight trailed, by whispered fright, and my pulses closed their gates with a shock on my heart as I heard the shrill-edged shriek of a mother divide the shuddering night. Villainy somewhere? Whose? One says we are villains all. Not he. His honest fame should at least by me be maintained. But that old man... the lord of the broad estate in the hall dropped off gorged from a scheme that had left us flaccid and drained. Why do they prate of the blessings of peace? We have made them a curse. Pickpockets, each hand lusting for all that is not its own, and lust of gain in the spirit of Cain. Is it better or worse than the heart of the citizen hissing in war on his own hearthstone? Sooner or later, I too may passively take the print of the golden age. Why? I have neither hope nor trust. May make my heart as a millstone, set my face as a flint, cheat and be cheated and die. Who knows? We are ashes and dust. What? Am I raging alone as my father raged in his mood? Must I too creep to the hollow and dash myself down and die, rather than hold by the law that I made, never more to brood on a horror of shattered limbs and a wretched swindler's lie? I am sick of the hall and the hill. I am sick of the moor and the main. Why should I stay? Can a sweeter chance ever come to me here? Oh, having the nerves of motion as well as the nerves of pain. Were it not wise if I fled from the place and the pit and the fear? Workmen up at the hall. They are coming back from abroad. The dark old place will be gilt by the touch of a millionaire. I have heard, I know not whence, of the singular beauty of Maud. I played with the girl when a child. She promised then to be fair. Maud with her venturous climbings and tumbles and childish escapes. Maud the delight of the village, the ringing joy of the hall. Maud with her sweet purse mouth when my father dangled the grapes. Maud the beloved of my mother, the moon-faced darling of all. What is she now? My dreams are bad. She may bring me a curse. No. There is fatter game on the moor. She will let me alone. Thanks, for the fiend best knows whether woman or man be the worse. I will bury myself in myself, and the devil may pipe to his own. Long have I sighed for a calm. God grant I may find it at last. It will never be broken by Maud. She has neither savour nor salt, but cold and clear-cut face as I found when her carriage passed. Perfectly beautiful, let it be granted her. Where is the fault? All that I saw, for her eyes were downcast, not to be seen, faultily faultless, icily regular, splendidly null. Dead perfection, no more, nothing more, if it had not been for a chance of travel, a paleness, an hour's defect of the rose, or an underlip, you may call it a little too ripe, too full, or the least little delicate aquiline curve in a sensitive nose, from which I escaped, heart-free, with the least little touch of spleen. Cold and clear-cut face. Why come you so cruelly meek, breaking a slumber in which all spleenful folly was drowned, pale, with the golden beam of an eyelash dead on the cheek, passionless, pale, cold face, star-sweet on a gloom profound, woman-like, taking revenge too deep for a transient wrong done but in thought to your beauty, and ever as pale as before, growing and fading and growing upon me without a sound, luminous, gem-like, ghost-like, death-like, half the night long, growing and fading and growing till I could bear it no more, but arose, and all by myself in my own dark garden ground, listening now to the tide in its broad-flung shipwrecking roar, now to the scream of a maddened beach dragged down by the wave, walked in a wintry wind by a ghastly glimmer and found a shining daffodil dead and Orion low in his grave. Break from the ruby-budded lime in the little grove where I sit. Ah. Wherefore cannot I be, like the things of the season, gay, like the bountiful season, bland, when the far-off sail is blown by the breeze of a softer clime, half lost in the liquid azure bloom of a crescent of sea, the silent sapphire-spangled marriage ring of the land. Below me, there, is the village. It looks how quiet and small, and yet bubbles o'er like a city with gossip, scandal and spite, and Jack on his alehouse bench has as many lies as a czar. And here on the landward side, by a red rock, glimmers the hall. And up in the high hall garden I see her pass like a light. But sorrow sees me if ever that light be my leading star. When have I bowed to her father, the wrinkled head of the race? I met her today with her brother, but not to her brother I bowed. I bowed to his lady sister as she rode by on the moor. But the fire of a foolish pride flashed over her beautiful face. Oh, child, you wrong your beauty, believe it, in being so proud. Your father has wealth well gotten, and I am nameless and poor. I keep but a man and a maid, ever ready to slander and steal. I know it, and smile a hard-set smile like a Stoic, or like a wiser Epicurean, and let the world have its way. For nature is one with rapine, a harm no preacher can heal. The mayfly is torn by the swallow, the sparrow speared by the shrike, and the whole little wood where I sit is a world of plunder and prey. Be mine a philosopher's life in the quiet woodland ways, where, if I cannot be gay, let a passionless peace be my lot, far off from the clamour of liars belied in the hubbub of lies, from the long-necked geese of the world that are ever hissing dispraise, because their natures are little, and whether he heed it or not, where each man walks with his head in a cloud of poisonous flies, yeah, and most of all would I flee from the cruel madness of love, the honey of poison flowers and all the measureless ill. Ah, Maud, you milk-white fawn, you are all unmeet for a wife. Your mother is mute in her grave as her image in marble above. Your father is ever in London. You wander about at your will. You have but fed on the roses and lain in the lilies of life. A voice by the cedar tree in the meadow under the hall. She is singing an air that is known to me. A passionate ballad, gallant and gay, a martial song like a trumpet's call, singing alone in the morning of life, in the happy morning of life and of May, singing of men that in battle array, ready in heart and ready in hand, march with banner and bugle and fife to the death for their native land. Silence, beautiful voice. Be still, for you only trouble the mind, with a joy in which I cannot rejoice, a glory I shall not find. Still, I will hear you no more, for your sweetness hardly leaves me a choice, but to move to the meadow and fall before her feet on the meadow grass and adore, not her who is neither courtly nor kind, not her, not her, but a voice. Morning arises, stormy and pale. No sun, but a wannish glare in fold upon fold of hueless cloud. And the budded peaks of the wood are bowed, caught and cuffed by the gale. I had fancied it would be fair. Whom but Maud should I meet? Last night when the sunset burned on the blossomed gable ends at the head of the village street, whom but Maud should I meet? And she touched my hand with a smile so sweet, she made me divine amends for a courtesy not returned. And thus a delicate spark of glowing and growing light, through the livelong hours of the dark, kept itself warm in the heart of my dreams, ready to burst in a coloured flame, till at last when the morning came, in a cloud it faded and seems but an ashen grey delight. What if with her sunny hair and smile as sunny as cold, she meant to weave me a snare of some coquettish deceit, Cleopatra-like as of old, to entangle me when we met, to have her lion roll in a silken net and fawn at a victor's feet. Oh, what shall I be at 50, should nature keep me alive, if I find the world so bitter when I am but 25? Yet, if she were not a cheat, if Maud were all that she seemed, and her smile were all that I dreamed, then the world were not so bitter, but a smile could make it sweet. What if, though her eyes seemed full of a kind intent to me, what if that dandy despot, he, that jewelled mass of millinery, that oiled and curled Assyrian bull, smelling of musk and of insolence, her brother, from whom I keep aloof, what if he had told her yestermorn how prettily for his own sweet sake a face of tenderness might be feigned, and a moist mirage in desert eyes, that so when the rotten hustings shake in another month to his brazen lies, a wretched vote may be gained? For a raven ever croaks at my side. Keep watch and ward, keep watch and ward, or thou wilt prove their tool. Yea, too, myself from myself I guard, for often a man's own angry pride is cap and bells for a fool. Perhaps the smile and tender tone came out of her pitying womanhood. For am I not here alone, so many a summer since she died, my mother, who was so gentle and good? Living alone in an empty house, here half hid in the gleaming wood, where I hear the dead at midday moan, and the shrieking rush of the wainscot mouse, and my own sad name in corners cried, when the shiver of dancing leaves is thrown about its echoing chambers wide, till a morbid hate and horror have grown of a world in which I have hardly mixed, and a morbid eating lichen fixed on a heart half turned to stone. O heart of stone, are you flesh and caught by that you swore to withstand? For what was it else within me wrought but, I fear, the new strong wine of love that made my tongue so stammer and trip when I saw the treasured splendour, her hand, come sliding out of her sacred glove, and the sunlight broke from her lip. Ah, well, 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 I may be beguiled by some coquettish deceit, yet if she were not a cheat, if Maud were all that she seemed, and her smile had all that I dreamed, then the world were not so bitter, but a smile could make it sweet. She came to the village church and sat by a pillar alone. An angel watching an urn wept over her, carved in stone. And once, but once, she lifted her eyes and suddenly, sweetly, strangely blushed to find they were met by my own. And suddenly, sweetly, my heart beat stronger and thicker until I heard no longer the snowy-banded, dilettante, delicate-handed priest in tone. And thought, is it pride? And mused and sighed. No, surely, now it cannot be pride. I was walking a mile, more than a mile from the shore. The sun looked out with a smile betwixt the cloud and the moor. And riding at set of day, over the dark moorland, rapidly riding far away, She waved me with her hand. There were two at her side. Something flashed in the sun. Down by the hill I saw them ride. In a moment they were gone, like a sudden spark struck vainly in the night. And back returns the dark, with no more hope of light.
Sick. Am I sick of a jealous dread? Was not one of the two at her side, this new-made lord, whose splendour plucks the slavish hat from the villager's head, rich in the grace all women desire, strong in the power that all men adore, and simper, and set their voices lower, and soften as if to a girl, and hold awe-stricken breaths at a work divine, seeing his gewgaw castle shine, new as his title, built last year, there amid perky larches and pine, and over the sullen purple moor. Look at it, pricking a cockney ear. What? Has he found my jewel out? For one of the two that rode at her side, bound for the hall, I am sure was he. Bound for the hall, and I think for a bride. Blithe would her brother's acceptance be. Maud could be gracious too, no doubt, to a lord, a captain, a padded shape, a bought commission, a waxen face, a rabbit mouth that is ever agape. Bought! What is it he cannot buy? And therefore splenetic, personal, base, a wounded thing with a rancorous cry, at war with myself and a wretched race, sick, sick to the heart of life am I. I wish I could hear again the chivalrous battle song that she warbled alone in her joy. I might persuade myself then she would not do herself this great wrong, to take a wanton, dissolute boy for a man and leader of men.
Oh God, for a man with heart, head, hand, like some of the simple great ones gone forever and ever by. One still strong man in a blatant land, whatever they call him, what care I? Aristocrat, democrat, autocrat, one who can rule and dare not lie. And ah, for a man to arise in me, that the man I am may cease to be. Oh, let the solid ground not fail beneath my feet before my life has found what some have found so sweet. Then let come what come may. What matter if I go mad? I shall have had my day. Let the sweet heavens endure, not close and darken above me, before I am quite, quite sure that there is one to love me. Then let come what come may, to a life that has been so sad, I shall have had my day. Birds in the high hall garden, when twilight was falling.
Maud, 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 Maud.
They were crying and calling. Where was Maud? In our wood. And I, who else was with her, gathering woodland lilies, myriads blow together. Birds in our wood sang, ringing through the valleys. Maud is here, 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 in among the lilies. I kissed her slender hand. She took the kiss sedately. Maud is not 17, but she is tall and stately. Birds in the high hall garden were crying and calling to her. Where is Maud, Maud, Maud? One is come to woo her. Look, a horse at the door, and little King Charlie snarling. Go back, my lord, across the moor. You are not her darling. Scorned?
To be scorned by one that I scorn? Is that a matter to make me fret? That a calamity hard to be borne? Well, he may live to hate me yet. Fool that I am to be vexed with his pride. I passed him. I was crossing his lands. He stood on the path a little aside. His face, as I grant, in spite of spite, has a broad-blown comeliness. Red and white, and 6'2" as I think he stands. But his essences turned the live air sick, and barbarous opulence, jewel-thick, suns itself on his breast and his hands. Who shall call me ungentle, unfair? I longed so heartily then and there to give him the grasp of fellowship. But while I passed, he was humming an air, stopped, and then with a riding whip, leisurely tapping a glossy boot and curving a contumelious lip, gorgonized me from head to foot with a stony British stare. Why sits he here in his father's chair? That old man never comes to his place. Shall I believe him ashamed to be seen? For only once, in the village street, last year I caught a glimpse of his face, a grey old wolf and a lean. And fair without, faithful within, Maud to him is nothing akin. Some peculiar mystic grace made her only the child of her mother, and heaped the whole inherited sin on that huge scapegoat of the race, all upon the brother. Peace, angry spirit, and let him be. Has not his sister smiled on me? Maud has a garden of roses and lilies fair on the lawn. There she walks in her state and tends upon bed and bower. And thither I climbed at dawn and stood by her garden gate. A lion ramps at the top. He is clasped by a passion flower. I heard no sound where I stood, but the rivulet on from the lawn running down to my own dark wood, or the voice of the long sea wave as it swelled now and then in the dim grey dawn. But I looked, and round, all round the house, I beheld the death-white curtain drawn, felt a horror over me creep, prickle my skin and catch my breath, knew that the death-white curtain meant but sleep. Yet I shuddered, and thought like a fool of the sleep of death. So dark a mind within me dwells, and I make myself such evil cheer, that if I be dear to someone else, then someone else may have much to fear. But if I be dear to someone else, then I should be to myself more dear. Shall I not take care of all that I think, yea, even of wretched meat and drink? If I be dear, if I be dear to someone else. That lump of earth has left his estate, the lighter by the loss of his weight, and so that he find what he went to seek, he may stay for a year who has gone for a week. But this is the day when I must speak, and I see my Oread coming down. Oh, this is the day. Catch not my breath, O clamorous heart. Let not my tongue be a thrall to my eye, for I must tell her before we part. I must tell her or die. Go not, happy day, from the shining fields. Go not, happy day, till the maiden yields. Rosy is the west, rosy is the south, roses are her cheeks, and a rose her mouth. When the happy yes falls,
falters from her lips. Pass and blush the news over the glowing ships, over blowing seas, over seas at rest. Pass the happy news, blush it through the west, till the red man dance by his red cedar tree and the red man's babe leap beyond the sea. Blush from west to east, blush from east to west, till the west is east, blush it through the west. Rosy is the west, rosy is the south, roses are her cheeks and a rose her mouth. I have led her home, my love, my only friend. There is none like her, none. And never yet so warmly ran my blood, and sweetly, on and on, calming itself to the long-wished-for end, full to the banks, close on the promised good. None like her. None. Just now the dry-tongued laurel's pattering talk seemed her light foot along the garden walk and shook my heart to think she comes once more. But even then I heard her close the door. The gates of heaven are closed. And she is gone. Here will I lie, while these long branches sway, and you fair stars that crown a happy day go in and out as if at merry play, who am no more so all forlorn as when it seemed far better to be born to labour and the mattock-hardened hand than nursed at ease and brought to understand a sad astrology. The boundless plan that makes you tyrants in your iron skies, innumerable pitiless, passionless eyes, cold fires, yet with power to burn and brand his nothingness into man. But now shine on, and what care I, who in this stormy gulf have found a pearl, the countercharm of space and hollow sky, and do accept my madness, and would die to save from some slight shame one simple girl. Let no one ask me how it came to pass. It seems that I am happy, that to me a livelier emerald twinkles in the grass, a purer sapphire melts into the sea. Dear heart, I feel with thee the drowsy spell, my bride-to-be, my evermore delight, my own heart's heart and ownest own farewell. It is but for a little space I go. And ye, meanwhile, far over moor and fell, beat to the noiseless music of the night. Has our whole earth gone nearer to the glow of your soft splendours that you look so bright? I have climbed nearer, out of lonely hell. Beat, happy stars, timing with things below. Beat with my heart, more blessed than heart can tell. Blessed but for some dark undercurrent woe that seems to draw. But it shall not be so. Let all be well. Be well. Her brother is coming back tonight, breaking up my dream of delight. My dream? Do I dream of bliss? I have walked awake with truth. Oh, when did a morning shine so rich in atonement as this for my dark dawning youth? Darkened watching a mother decline, and that dead man at her heart and mine, for who was left to watch her but I? Yet so did I let my freshness die. I trust that I did not talk to gentle Maud in our walk, for often in lonely wanderings I've cursed him even to lifeless things, but I trust that I did not talk, not touch on her father's sin. I I'm sure I did but speak of my mother's faded cheek, when it slowly grew so thin that I felt she was slowly dying, vexed with lawyers and harassed with debt. For how often I caught her with eyes all wet, shaking her head at her son and sighing, a world of trouble within. And Maud, too, Maud was moved to speak of the mother she loved as one scarce less forlorn, dying abroad, and it seems apart from him who had ceased to share her heart, and ever mourning over the feud, the household fury sprinkled with blood by which our houses are torn. How strange was what she said when only Maud and her brother hung over her dying bed, that Maud's dark father and mine had bound us one to the other, betrothed us over their wine, on the day when Maud was born. Sealed her mine from her first sweet breath. Mine, mine by a right from birth till death. Mine, mine, our fathers have sworn. But then what a flint is he! Abroad, at Florence, at Rome, I find whenever she touched on me, this brother had laughed her down. And at last, when each came home, he had darkened into a frown, chid her, and forbid her to speak to me, her friend of the years before, and this was what had reddened her cheek when I bowed to her on the moor. Yet Maud, although not blind to the faults of his heart and mind, I see she cannot but love him, and says he is rough but kind, and wishes me to approve him, and tells me when she lay sick once with a fear of worse, that he left his wine and horses and play, sat with her, read to her night and day, and tended her like a nurse. Kind? But the deathbed desire spurned by this heir of the liar. Rough but kind? Yet I know he has plotted against me in this, that he plots against me still. Kind to Maud, that were not amiss. Well, rough but kind. Why, let it be so. For shall not Maud have her will? So, now I have sworn to bury all this dead body of hate, I feel so free and so clear by the loss of that dead weight, that I should grow light-headed, I fear, fantastically merry. But that her brother comes, like a blight on my fresh hope, to the hall tonight. Strange that I felt so gay. Strange that I tried today to beguile her melancholy. The Sultan, as we name him, she did not wish to blame him, but he vexed her and perplexed her with his worldly talk and folly. Was it gentle to reprove her for stealing out of view from a little lazy lover who but claims her as his due, or for chilling his caresses by the coldness of her manners? Nay, the plainness of her dresses. Now, I know her but in two, nor can pronounce upon it if one should ask me whether the habit, hat and feather, or the frock and gypsy bonnet be the neater and completer, for nothing can be sweeter than Maiden Maud in either. But tomorrow, if we live, our ponderous squire will give a grand political dinner to half the squirelings near, and Maud will wear her jewels, and the bird of prey will hover, and the titmouse hope to win her with his chirrup at her ear. A grand political dinner to the men of many acres, a gathering of the Tory, a dinner and then a dance for the maids and marriage makers, and every eye but mine will glance at Maud in all her glory. For I am not invited, but with the Sultan's pardon, I am all as well delighted, for I know her own rose garden, and mean to linger in it till the dancing will be over, and then, oh then, come out to me, for a minute, but for a minute, come out to your own true lover, that your true lover may see your glory also, and render all homage to his own darling, Queen Maud in all her splendour.
Rivulet, crossing my ground and bringing me down from the hall, this garden rose that I found. Oh, rivulet, born at the hall, my Maud has sent it by thee, if I read her sweet will right, on a blushing mission to me, saying in odour and colour, ah, be among the roses tonight.
Come into the garden, Maud, for the black bat night has flown. Come into the garden, Maud, I am here at the gate alone. And the woodbine spices are wafted abroad, and the musk of the roses blown. For a breeze of morning moves, and the planet of love is on high, beginning to faint in the light that she loves on a bed of daffodil sky. To faint in the light of the sun she loves, to faint in his light and to die. All night have the roses heard, the flute, violin, bassoon. All night has the casement jessamine stirred to the dancers dancing in tune, till a silence fell with the waking bird and a hush with the setting moon. I said to the lily, there is but one with whom she has heart to be gay. When will the dancers leave her alone? She is weary of dance and play. Now half to the setting moon are gone, and half to the rising day. Low on the sand and loud on the stone, the last wheel echoes away. I said to the rose, the brief night goes in babble and revel and wine. O young lord lover, what sighs are those for one that will never be thine? But mine... but mine, so I swear to the rose, forever and ever mine. And the soul of the rose went into my blood as the music clashed in the hall. And long by the garden lake I stood, for I heard your rivulet fall from the lake to the meadow and on to the wood, our wood that is dearer than all. There has fallen a splendid tear from the passion flower at the gate. She is coming, my dove, my dear. She is coming, my life, my fate. The red rose cries, she is near, she is near. And the white rose weeps, she is late. The larkspur listens, I hear, I hear. And the lily whispers, I wait. She is coming, my own, my sweet, were it ever so airy a tread. My heart would hear her and beat were it earth in an earthy bed. My dust would hear her and beat had I lain for a century dead, would start and tremble under her feet and blossom in purple and red. Why am I sitting here so stunned and still? Plucking the harmless wild flower on the hill. It is this guilty hand. And there rises ever a passionate cry from underneath in the darkening land. What is it that has been done? For she, sweet soul, had hardly spoken a word when her brother ran in his rage to the gate. He came with the babe-faced lord, heaped on her terms of disgrace, and while she wept and I strove to be cool, he fiercely gave me the lie, till I with as fierce an anger spoke, and he struck me, madman, over the face, struck me before the languid fool who was gaping and grinning by, struck for himself an evil stroke, wrought for his house an irredeemable woe. For front to front in an hour we stood, and a million horrible bellowing echoes broke from the red-ribbed hollow behind the wood, and thundered up into heaven the Christless code that must have life for a blow. Ever and ever afresh they seemed to grow. Was it he lay there with a fading eye,
fault was mine, he whispered. Fly. Then glided out of the joyous wood, the ghastly wraith of one that I know. And there rang on a sudden a passionate cry, a cry for a brother's blood. It will ring in my heart and my ears till I die. Till I die. Is it gone? My pulses beat. What was it? A lying trick of the brain. Yet I thought I saw her stand, a shadow there at my feet, high over the shadowy land. It is gone. And the heavens fall in a gentle rain when they should burst and drown with deluging storms, the feeble vassals of wine and anger and lust, the little hearts that know not how to forgive. Arise, my God, and strike, for we hold thee just. Strike dead the whole weak race of venomous worms that sting each other here in the dust. We are not worthy to live. See what a lovely shell, small and pure as a pearl, lying close to my foot. Frail, but a work divine, made so fairily well, with delicate spire and whirl, how exquisitely minute, a miracle of design, here on the Breton strand. Here, like a shipwrecked man on a coast of ancient fable and fear, plagued with a flitting to and fro, a disease, a hard mechanic ghost that never came from on high nor ever arose from below, but only moves with the moving eye, flying along the land and the main. Why should it look like Maud? Am I to be overawed by what I cannot but know is a juggle born of the brain? And now I remember, when he lay dying there, I noticed one of his many rings, for he had many, poor worm, and thought, it is his mother's hair. Who knows if he be dead? Whether I need have fled? Am I guilty of blood? However this may be, comfort her, all things good, while I am over the sea. Let me and my passionate love go by, but speak to her all things holy and high, whatever happen to me. Me and my harmful love go by, but come to her waking, find her asleep, powers of the height, powers of the deep, and comfort her, though I die. Courage, poor heart of stone. I will not ask thee why thou canst not understand that thou art left forever alone. Courage, poor, stupid heart of stone. Or if I ask thee why, care not thou to reply. She is but dead, and the time is at hand when thou shalt more than die. A shadow flits before me, not thou, but like to thee. O Christ, that it were possible for one short hour to see the souls we loved, that they might tell us what and where they be. It leads me forth at evening, lightly winds and steals in a cold white road before me, when all my spirit reels at the shouts, the leagues of lights, and the roaring of the wheels. Half the night I waste in sighs, half in dreams. I sorrow after the delight of early skies. In a wakeful doze, I sorrow for the hand, the lips, the eyes, for the meeting of the morrow, the delight of happy laughter, the delight of low replies.
'Tis a morning pure and sweet, and a dewy splendour falls on the little flower that clings to the turrets and the walls. 'Tis a morning pure and sweet, and the light and shadow fleet. She is walking in the meadow, and the woodland echo rings. In a moment we shall meet. She is singing in the meadow, and the rivulet at her feet ripples on in light and shadow to the ballad that she sings. Do I hear her sing as of old? My bird with the shining head, my own dove with the tender eye? But there rings on a sudden a passionate cry. There is someone dying or dead, and a sullen thunder is rolled, for a tumult shakes the city, and I wake. My dream is fled. In the shuddering dawn, behold, without knowledge, without pity, by the curtains of my bed, that abiding phantom cold. Then I rise, the eavesdrops fall, and the yellow vapours choke the great city sounding wide. The day comes, a dull red ball wrapped in drifts of lurid smoke on the misty river tide. Through the hubbub of the market I steal a wasted frame. It crosses here, it crosses there, through all that crowd, confused and loud, the shadow still the same. And on my heavy eyelids my anguish hangs like shame. Alas for her that met me, that heard me softly call, came glimmering through the laurels at the quiet evenfall, in the garden by the turrets of the old manorial hall. But the broad light glares and beats, and the shadow flits and fleets and will not let me be. And I loathe the squares and streets and the faces that one meets, hearts with no love for me. Always I long to creep into some still cavern deep, there to weep and weep and weep my whole soul out to thee. Dead, long dead, long dead, and my heart is a handful of dust, and the wheels go over my head, and my bones are shaken with pain, for into a shallow grave they are thrust, only a yard beneath the street, and the hooves of the horses beat, beat, the hooves of the horses beat, beat into my scalp and my brain, with never an end to the stream of passing feet, driving, hurrying, marrying, burying, clamour and rumble and ringing and clatter. And here beneath it is all as bad, for I thought the dead had peace, but it is not so. To have no peace in the grave, is that not sad? But up and down and to and fro, ever about me the dead men go. And then to hear a dead man chatter is enough to drive one mad. Who told him we were there? Not that grey old wolf, for he came not back from the wilderness full of wolves where he used to lie. He has gathered the bones for his o'ergrown whelp to crack. Crack them now for yourself, and howl, and die. Tell him now. She is standing here at my head, not beautiful now, not even kind. He may take her now, for she never speaks her mind, but is ever the one thing silent here. She is not of us, as I divine. She comes from another, stiller world of the dead. Stiller, not fairer than mine. But I know where a garden grows, fairer than aught in the world beside, all made up of the lily and rose that blow by night when the season is good, to the sound of dancing music and flutes. It is only flowers, They had no fruits. And I almost fear they are not roses, but blood. But what will the old man say? He laid a cruel snare in a pit to catch a friend of mine one stormy day. Yet now I could even weep to think of it. For what will the old man say when he comes to the second corpse in the pit?
Oh, me, why have they not buried me deep enough? Is it kind to have made me a grave so rough, me that was never a quiet sleeper? Maybe still I am but half dead. Then I cannot be wholly dumb. I will cry to the steps above my head, and somebody, surely, some kind heart will come to bury me deeper, ever so little deeper.
My life has crept so long on a broken wing, through cells of madness, haunts of horror and fear, that I come to be grateful at last for a little thing. My mood is changed, for it fell but like a silent lightning under the stars. She seemed to divide in a dream from a band of the blessed, and spoke of a hope for the world in the coming wars. And in that hope, dear soul, let trouble have rest, knowing I tarry for thee, and pointed to Mars as he glowed like a ruddy shield on the lion's breast. And it was but a dream, yet it lightened my despair when I thought that a war would arise in defense of the right, that an iron tyranny now should bend or cease, the glory of manhood stand on his ancient height, nor Britain's one sole god be the millionaire. And as months ran on, and rumor of battle grew, it is time. It is time, O passionate heart, said I, that old hysterical mock disease should die. And I stood on a giant deck and mixed my breath with a loyal people shouting a battle cry, till I saw the dreary phantom arise and fly far into the north, and battle and seas of death. Let it go or stay. Though many a light shall darken, and many shall weep for those that are crushed in the clash of jarring claims, yet God's just wrath shall be wreaked on a giant lion, and many a darkness into the light shall leap. And now, by the side of the black and the Baltic deep, and the deathful grinning mouths of the fortress, flames the blood-red blossom of war, with a heart of fire. Let it flame or fade, and the war roll down like a wind. We have proved we have hearts in a cause. We are noble still, and myself have awaked, as it seems, to the better mind. It is better to fight for the good than to rail at the ill. I have felt with my native land. I am one with my kind. I embrace the purpose of God and the doom assigned.
To mark National Poetry Day 2013, that was Maud by Alfred Lord Tennyson, read by Joseph Milson. The singer was Catherine Nutbeam, sound design by Christopher Schutt, and the producer was Abigail Le Fleming.
A mistimed proposal.
We've just been in Paris. You could have asked me up the Eiffel Tower or at the Louvre.
A secret past.
There are whole things about me you can't even guess.
A change of destination.
Where are you taking us?
You have business to attend to.
It's amazing what can happen in 2 minutes.
What's going on?
With a story told by its listeners, Chain Gang returns to BBC Radio 4 Extra on Saturday afternoon at 1:10.
find out how to get involved on our website.
Now, next week on 4 Extra, we have another sinister story that explores the dark depths of the forest and the dark depths of the mind. A father takes his son away to a cabin in the woods to do a bit of father-son bonding, but the tension between the pair must be put aside in the face of inexplicable horror.
All day in the heat, there was no water. Perhaps the world ends when all the water runs out. Perhaps this was the end of the world. When I got back, he was gone.
Dad? Dad! Where are you?
And then, there he was, in the distance.
Dad.
Staggering around with a blanket round his shoulders.
Oh, Dad, you all right, mate?
He looked scared.
All right, look at you, you're sweating. Oh, come on, mate, we'll take you inside. Come here. Coming. Come on, Dad.
It's time. It's time.
Dad.
Starring Kenneth Cranham and Joe Dempsey and recorded on location in a forest in Kent, The Rainmaker by Matthew Broughton. It's our play next Wednesday morning at 11:15 and again in the evening at 9:15 here on 4 Extra. Now, I'm making my excuses and leaving. It's 4 o'clock and you know what's coming next. Wes Butters back with you at 5 for an hour of comedy. Have fun.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, I'm Margot Roach. This is the 4 o'clock show. Who's got more questions than answers?
The American singer with the surname Spears, who had UK number one hit singles entitled Baby One More Time and Oops, I Did It Again, has what first name?
My favourite artist, Britney.
I'd sense some irony in there.
What kind of person puts a message in a bottle?
It all started when I was 10. I threw a bottle in the channel with my name and address in it. I suppose I was sure that somebody somewhere would find it.
For your information, this is an Anne Robinson impression. Yeah, go with it, gang. Yeah, good. Who's wearing rubber gloves and still hasn't done the dishes? That's right, it's me. Welcome to the kitchen sink. All I'm going to say is, Jan Ravens, watch out, yeah? Because there's a new impressionist on the block. Anyway, lots of questions to be answered on today's show. The first being, why did you do that Anne Robinson impression, Mel? Anyway, note to self, I'll sort that out later. Another one, a very important one, is why have I not cleaned this morning's coffee cups? So, well, sorry, I've got to get on with this slot. You can look forward to more quiz fun from Fred McCauley and keep it in the family. We're going to be exploring the history of the humble message in a bottle with questions, and we'll go looking for answers to the mysteries in our current story, Tom's Midnight Garden by Philippa Pierce.
Their skates were on, and now Hattie and Tom were ready for the ice. Two skaters on one pair of skates, which seemed to Tom both the eeriest and most natural thing in the world. He could skate as well as Hattie because he had her skates.
Before we begin, there's the small matter of another magical mystery tour to decipher. Where could we be heading to today? Well, as ever, I'll hurl clues at you. Left, right and centre. You've got to catch them and arrange them in the shape of a mystery location. OK, today we're heading to an archipelago of islands that are often described as paradise. Your first clue is this. This place is home to a very famous dance that may or may not feature coconut shells and grass skirts. I couldn't possibly say. Mull that little clue over. No, it's not the Isle of Mull. I was just saying Mull. Yeah, mull that clue over, and I'll come back to you with further hints throughout the show.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's Thursday on the 4 o'clock show. We love a Thursday because it means it's time to cast the magnifying glass of truth over another of life's great questions. Today we're asking, what's the oldest form of global communication? Forget email, text, or even carrier pigeon. For reporter Kate Taylor, nothing compares, cue Sting, to the humble message in a bottle. Just a castaway, an island lost at sea.
It all started when I was 10 and, with my family, went to France for the first time in a summer holiday. I threw a bottle in the Channel with my name and address in it. I suppose I was sure that somebody somewhere would find it.
10-year-old Annie Rivett was not the first person to have scribbled a message, stuffed it in a bottle, and cast it adrift on the rolling deep. Almost as soon as we could write, it seems, we have been throwing our masterpieces into the sea.
The earliest recorded is meant to have been sent by a Greek geographer, a philosopher, Theophrastus, in around 310 BC, when he was interested in working out how currents floated around the Mediterranean.
Dr. Mark Horton is a reader in archaeology at the University of Bristol and an expert on marine archaeology.
Even as late as the 19th century, let alone the 15th and 16th century, communication at sea was really difficult. Queen Elizabeth actually had a post, a royal post called the Royal Uncorker of the Bottle. Her sea captains were encouraged to use this method to communicate where they were at sea during battles and so forth during the Spanish Armada and around that time.
You might imagine that the days when a shipwrecked sailor